Happy day. I'm Liza, your healing mentor. I used to say, all I need in life is for my kids to be happy and healthy. The problem was they weren't happy and they weren't healthy. Both my kids had anxiety, depression, and even Lyme disease. Then one day my daughter told her therapist, what would make me happy is if my mom was happy. So I went on a journey to find my own personal happiness. When I finally became happy, my own kids accelerated in their own healing journey. Now I share my stories, my mindset, and other inspirational healers with you. Let's heal one story at a time. Happy day. Welcome to Very Happy Stories. This is such an important conversation to have, especially if you are a parent who has a child with psychiatric issues or mental health challenges. Today, I interviewed Dr. Rosalie Greenberg. She is a board-certified adult, child, and adolescent psychiatrist known for her expertise in the diagnosis and management of complex psychiatric problems in children. So the big question is, are there connections between psychiatric issues in children and bacterial infections? The short answer is yes, but how common are these connections? That's what we unpack in this important episode. So let's dive in. Happy day. Thank you so much, Dr. Greenberg, for being on Very Happy Stories.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
I am so excited to have you. So the first time I heard you speak was at ILADS and just recently in Orlando. And I have to say, when you were giving your presentation, I was so impressed with all your case studies and all of your knowledge and expertise. And then there was also a little part of me that felt some sadness and grief because how I wished I would have worked with a psychiatrist like you, because my kids went so many years undiagnosed with these infections. And so my intention today is to bring you on and really unpack this conversation of tick-borne illnesses, infections, brain inflammation, and how this is affecting our kids.
I agree. I think it's a crucial subject to discuss. I really do.
Me too. I see just more and more families struggling. And I know that through our awareness and everything that you do in the arena, people are going to start getting the message. But why don't we first start with, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you live? What is your expertise? All that good stuff.
Okay. Let's see. I'm a child psychiatrist. I practice in Summit, New Jersey. I have what you would call a tertiary kind of practice, tertiary psychopharmacologic practice, which means I see kids that have seen lots of other people, but are still maybe not properly diagnosed, not responding to treatment. So more of an expert type of evaluation, assessment, and treatment. Let's see, I was trained at Columbia. I graduated Columbia Medical School, adult psychiatry training and child psychiatry training, where I was chief resident. I was on the voluntary faculty for a number of years. I like to have fun with what I do. And that can sound like, what is she talking about? But first of all, I love kids. They are just great. I mean, nobody gets the stories that I get, okay? But I have had the opportunity, because I like education, is I've written some books. I had a local show.
Yeah.
And I lecture to public and professionals. And that's all fun for me, because to be able to share what I see, what I've learned from my patients, and there's no questions. That's how you learn. The kids teach you. And so it's been wonderful. I feel like, you know, people, when they hear I'm a child psychiatrist, they say, oh, that must be really hard and must be so rough. And I think I'm blessed with what I'm doing. If I'm successful, I can give a kid a childhood. Wow. What could be a better thing than that? I can't imagine.
Yes. And giving the child their childhood is, it's a gift to the world. It's not just the child and the family, you know, it just builds and builds. And I know you had mentioned you are an avid learner. Where did you learn about tick-borne illnesses and infections? Is this something that you studied in school?
No. Again, I told you, my patients teach me. So it's been a journey. Okay. I did train at Columbia with experts in childhood, mood disorder, and a more biologic approach to children. I saw my first bipolar kid, what was it, 1980, I think it was. Okay. So people say you can't diagnose it. Well, I saw my first one then, and there was no question in my mind this child was bipolar. So it gave me more of a biologic orientation. And over time, I wound up being an expert in bipolar kids. And I wrote a book about it. And now I do lectures, and I was known for this. And I knew about infections ever since Susan Sweeto, who put PANDAS on the map, autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorders after a strep infection. She found that following strep infections in some kids, instead of developing heart problems like a rheumatic fever, they might develop behavioral, mood, psychiatric problems, tick-borne illness, or OCD.
Yes.
So I was familiar and I'm following that work. And it was great. After the first lecture that I heard, 3 weeks later, I diagnosed my first kid with PANDAS. That was wild.
Can you just tell me, just for my own frame of reference, when was this? Like, give us the time frame of the year. Is this like early 90s, mid 90s?
Probably like 2002 or something.
Okay. Okay.
Quite a while ago. But wow, that was exciting. Okay. So I have these different biologic interests and I become the expert in bipolar kids. And well, let's see. I had one young man who came to me after being hospitalized psychiatrically, like three times in the previous year. He was around maybe 12. And he was diagnosed as bipolar, but quite difficult, not that responsive to medication. And I treated him with meds. And for a while, I know bipolar kids, and generally, I can work with them and help them. So he's better for a few months. But then he started having problems. And I knew if I didn't get his act together, this kid was going into residential treatment. So you think of all the tools in your toolbox, right?
Right.
So maybe he has a PANDAS. So I asked his mother. She says, he's never had a strep in his life. Okay. Although his sister gets it all the time. Okay. He was exposed. I get testing. His strep titers are very high.
Really?
Absolutely.
But how is that possible when he never developed a strep infection?
Well, but look at the manifestation. He had a PANDAS. It was experience. I mean, look, you can have all these infections. Do you know that 1 in 7 people in the world are, if you do blood work, are positive for exposure to Borrelia, to Lyme, the bacteria that causes Lyme?
1 in 7.
That doesn't mean that 1 in 7 people in the world are walking around with Lyme. We get exposed to many things and they can manifest in many ways or they can stay dormant, right? Think about shingles. You had your chicken pox, but later on when you're older and maybe there's stress or some other illness, you get shingles. So we're full of all of these bugs that we've been exposed to in our life. And some people can actually carry strep. They can just have it naturally and not be sick. So anyway, well, that was a surprise and I repeated it. I mean, normal is like 0 to 180 or 0 to 200 on the ASO titer, antistreptolysin O. He was 800 something. So, you know, it was like, whoa.
Yes, big whoa.
So I had him seen by a colleague who also treats and is familiar with PANS and PANDAS. And he put him on an antibiotic and not much change. But But the titers also didn't change. The blood work didn't change. It was clear it wasn't really impacting it. So after a while, the doctor, also added another antibiotic. And then when the kid came back at 3 months, it was a totally different child. I saw something I have never seen in my entire life. And I mean this, I really do. Because this kid who was angry, irritable, miserable, just ready for a fight, was sweet, loving. He, was cuddling with his mother. And he said, Dr. Greenberg, I think I'm going to get all A's in school. I'm gonna really work. He never did his homework. He never did anything. And I'm like, okay. So that was really an eye-opener.
Remarkable.
And I knew he, he was bipolar, but he's also has this PANDAS, whatever this is, because it was just amazing to me. And his titers went down and he was treated for a while. And it made a difference. There's no question in my mind. Off antibiotics, he had trouble. But that will go to the next part of it. So I try and I look at my other bipolar kids, the new ones that I get in evaluation, just because, I don't know, maybe I'm missing something. And the typical workup is you look for strep. You look for a bacteria called Mycoplasma pneumoniae. Okay, Mycoplasma pneumoniae, actually. But of course, it's the walking pneumonia that kids get. Very, very common. As well as you do a Lyme test, the standard ones that you might get from LabCorp or Quest. And other tests, vitamins, whatever. I noticed that more of my kids were actually positive for having exposure to mycoplasma, which we didn't know they had or had in the past.
What is mycoplasma?
It's a bacteria. It causes walking pneumonia, but it can also cause a lot of other issues, with other parts of your body, as well as psychiatrically. It can cause a PANS, pediatric acute onset neuropsychiatric symptoms, syndrome.
Yep.
And that's just saying, that the child has OCD or eating problems or a bunch of things and a bunch of psychiatric symptoms. Okay, so this is weird. So a lot more kids have mycoplasma in my practice. And then somehow I heard ticks can carry mycoplasma. Oh, well, what the heck? I'm from Brooklyn. I don't remember any ticks. That was not an issue for me ever. Let me learn about ticks. And once I got into that, that was a whole new world. And it was fascinating because I learned about how you have to get specialized testing, how, the Quest and LabCorp, if you get a positive there, oh my God, you're positive. But, it's positive in less than half the cases.
Right. It's the reality.
And so I learned about it and learned about how, less than half the kids have rashes. In my practice, the majority, nobody knew they were ever bitten by a tick. And I picked up a bunch of congenital cases and diagnosed the moms. And that's much more common than people realize.
Yes.
I can't tell you how often that happens because I'll evaluate the kid. You get a kid from the get-go. I'm sorry. Is that what happened to you? I don't know.
Yeah, that did happen to me. And so you're talking about this, and I'm always interviewing mothers, and I'm always in a community of mothers. And these complex cases, they can most certainly be congenital loads. And I think what's so tricky about it is when a mother has Lyme or mycoplasma or these co-infections, they are also struggling with a load, a bacterial load, and their own mental health issues. And so you can only imagine the dynamic in the home with a mother who's really barely holding on to her own mental health issues. And then you have this presentation with your child or more than one child, two kids, three kids, it's not uncommon. And it just becomes a disaster. So I just wanted to validate and acknowledge what you're saying because it happened in my house too.
It's amazing. I mean, like I said, I discovered this from my practice. It's not like I read this somewhere.
Right.
But I diagnose kids, and often with congenital, what I find is you'll get early issues, be it feeding problems, or the kid was crying a lot, or they had a lot of allergies. They got a lot of early infections. Their immune system just wasn't so hot. And, you know, like one of them, I know I wrote this up in a blog, but before he was 4 years old, I think he saw like 9 medical consultants. And it was ridiculous. It's too much. Somebody has to think, what's going on here?
So true. We start, but this has happened to me, and I feel like you do as the parent. It just kind of gets minimized through the talk with physicians and pediatricians of like, well, that's normal. Or actually, it's not that they say it's normal. They just say things like, we see this a lot. We see asthma and allergies. It's really more common than you think. And then you start feeling like these are normal without them saying it's normal.
Listen, the thing that got me was his 3-year-old. He didn't sleep. Okay. He didn't sleep, and he had a sleep study and this and that. Anyway, he was more verbal. He said, Mommy, my legs hurt me. My back hurts. Okay. Took him to the pediatrician. Pediatrician said it was growing pains. What the heck? Growing pains at 3 years old? Let's get real here. And I'm not trying to be critical of pediatricians. I mean, they're amazing, and we all do the best we can. But I realized this poor baby probably didn't sleep through the night because he had pains.
Yes.
And he couldn't tell anybody. And he went, of course, he got to see an orthopedist and this and that. Nobody found anything until I said, let's test him. And of course, he was positive for Lyme and Babesia and Bartonella. And then I discovered from his mother that in the second trimester of pregnancy, she had a tick bite and was treated for Lyme.
Wow.
So there's so much more that we need to learn. But if I see a kid and the kid's presenting, okay, well, clearly they have psychiatric issues because that's why they're coming to me. But an early history of a lot of stuff, I love to then go and ask the mom about, gee, you know, did you have any funny stuff like in your 20s or your 30s? Like the doctor thought maybe you had a MS, or maybe you have a mono, or maybe you have myalgic encephalitis, whatever, you know, any of these, or fibromyalgia, whatever. And then they wound up, they said, no, actually, it's not that. We're not sure what that is, but it's okay. And then everybody forgets it. I can't tell you how often that happens. And then to me, that's like, bingo. And often then I get the mom tested. Either I test them or I refer them to a colleague, because I don't treat the tick-borne illness. I treat the psychiatric aspects. But it pans out. I mean, it's a number of mothers that I've diagnosed.
Yeah. And so let me ask you this. I've got so many questions in my head. Well, when you have a child come to you that's presenting bipolar or other OCD, other type of psychiatric issues, is it common that they will end up testing positive for some type of bacterial infection, or is this a very rare thing?
Look, I don't think we know how common it is, but I work in New Jersey, which is ticks are endemic. You know, Lyme is endemic. It's all over the place. Okay. And we know ticks carry multiple types of infections. So here I had my bipolar kids, my new ones, and I kept checking them for infections. And, you know, like I said, since I'm an expert on that, you know, I get those referrals more than most people. And I kept finding a lot of them had infections, tick-borne infections. And actually treating them could make a difference in psychiatric outcome. And I'll explain that after. But because of what I saw, I said, wait a minute, I've got a bunch of kids that I've been treating for years. Do they have tick-borne illnesses? And I went back and I was shocked. Okay, I can't tell you how many did. And I actually published a study of 27 of my bipolar kids. You know, at least 3/4 of them had evidence of tick-borne illness. Actually, almost 90% had evidence of some form of infection, including mycoplasma and strep. And the testing was positive. But we know you can't make a diagnosis, especially tick-borne illness, because it's such a complicated thing. So the ones that were positive, though, I sent them to clinicians, to doctors who would treat them, for them to make the diagnosis, not me. And the majority of the kids were then treated for tick-borne illness. Now, we have to think about a few different things with that. One is, I'm in New Jersey. You know, Lyme's all over, ticks are all over. So that would make sense that I would have more of that than somebody practicing in some other state where, you know, North Carolina. Well, North Carolina, you make.
I was trying to think of a state myself.
Yeah. Well, it's been found in all 50 states.
Exactly.
But you know what I'm saying? It's much less than some other states. New Jersey and Pennsylvania, they're known for the ticks. So that's one caveat. And I'm looking for it. What happened was, actually, it's a funny story. I kept getting so many kids that were testing using Igenix, which is a specialized lab, which many people use. It's expensive, but I think it's been incredibly helpful. So I wound up, I did my bipolar kids, and I found like I had 17 positive for Babesia, you know, which is a parasite that's like mycoplasma, malaria, right, you know, and other things like that, rather. This doesn't make sense. Maybe the lab is giving me too many positives. Not a good test, and everybody's positive. So I took a sample of my own blood. I had somebody draw it. We sent it in under my married name, but not my professional name. And it came back negative.
So you wanted to test the test.
That's right. Well, let's face it. These kids are going to, they may get treated and someone's going to say, oh, look. And the FISH test is a great test. The FISH is fluorescent in situ hybridization. In order for it to be positive, you have to actually view three of the organisms. You have to see three Babesiae, whatever the hell they are. Three of the bacteria, okay? In order to make the diagnosis. I mean, your eyes don't lie. Highly sensitive and specific. But, you know, obviously, so I tested the test. Then I called up the head of the lab and I said, look, this is what I got. This is like crazy. And she said to me, let me see. Give me those names again. She was shocked because it was so unusual to have so many positives for Babesia. And one of my guys, you know, had gone to the person who's treating him and the mother showed him the test and he said, oh, I don't even get this test anymore because you never get positive.
Really?
Well, that was it. It was like, okay, I'm seeing something.
It's so interesting. My kids both were positive for Babesia through the Igenix test. And the biggest thing that both of my kids had in common was this sudden onset presentation of anxiety.
Anxiety is the thing people think about with Babesia. Absolutely.
It's just a dysregulated form of hyper anxiety that is not reasonable. Then that's really what I saw. And they both had that. And so it's not shocking. I mean, you're telling this story and I know a lot of people are going to be shocked. It's not shocking to me because this was my life. But when you think about the patients that come to you, they're coming to you because they have these psychiatric conditions. So it's not surprising in your caseload that this is happening.
Now, look, some parents don't accept it. And a lot of doctors don't accept it and believe in this. You know, this is fancy schmancy testing, so you pay more, but that doesn't mean it's better. You know, it's a Quest and LabCorp standard. And, you know, they will go to Ivy League centers or other, you know, immunologists, infectious disease, whatever. And it really depends on who they go to. If the person is familiar with tick-borne illness and familiar with the testing and how this all works. And many times, you know, they'll go over to CHOP, Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania, I remember one person looked at the fish and said, the doctor said, I never heard of this test. What is this? And he had to go look it up. And he said, forget this. Your child doesn't have this. No comment. But that happens a lot where they'll go to a doctor who says, I don't really think this is the case, but okay, we'll treat it for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And it's not enough.
Right.
And with Bartonella, I have even a better story if you want to know.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about Bartonella too, because when I think about all the infections, and in my world, we call these co-infections. So you might be familiar with those. Bartonella has been a beast all its own. So we really should talk about Bartonella and the presentation, because some listeners could really resonate with these types of symptoms. But before we do, I just want to say, you know, this is why everything that you're saying, Heather's going to be a lot of pediatricians or doctors that you see that are just going to be like, I've never heard of this. And
I'm with them. I never heard of it before either.
And that's why it's so, you shouldn't dismiss a parent from looking further into it. And that's why they have LLMDs, Lyme literate MDs. And I know you recommend them to your patients then that test positive. And so I just wanted to put that out there, because I know there could be some listeners thinking, okay, well then what? So Lyme literate MDs, you know, is definitely something you need to look into. And there are resources for those types of physicians. But yes, let's talk about too Bartonella. Give us a Bartonella story of a child, how they presented. And if you could too, you know, the recovery, what it looked like when the child didn't have Bartonella as much anymore.
Well, remember the child I mentioned before with
the boy,
he started acting up again. And by that point, I was familiar with tick-borne testing. And guess who had Bartonella?
The boy.
Of course. And Bartonella is fascinating. It's all over the place. And we will learn a lot more about it over time, because I think it's a much bigger player in mental health and other issues.
I'm getting goosebumps right now. It is so huge in the world of psychiatry.
Oh, there's no question in my mind. People always talk about Bartonella rage, because often these kids are very angry and irritable and obnoxious, which is a nice thing to say, because they're off the wall. A few things with Bart. If you're lucky, and I say lucky because some kids get actually visible signs of the illness. They have what's called stria, stretch marks. But it's not, you can get stretch marks, like the marks we get during pregnancy, okay? You know, we all get it as a belly expands, okay? But the kids have it, and they can have it on their backs or on their arms, on their thighs. I've seen it on the breasts.
I've seen it on the buttocks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I call those within my community Bart marks. It's very common to call them Bart marks.
Okay, I haven't heard that, but actually, these days, I think they're trying to call them Bart tracks. They're hoping stria to get away from the confusion medically with what the marks that you get, the stria that you get with Cushing's or pregnancy or other. Doesn't matter. But we are saying that Bart leaves its mark. And the lesions, so you see it in unusual places. And like they're a reddish purplish. When you treat the kids with the antibiotics, and as they get better, it will start blanching and it will whiten, which, you know, that is great because you don't see a visible thing with many things, but this is like in front of your face. But okay, so Bartonella. So Bartonella, the lab, I think Igenix does a good job, and Galaxy Diagnostics is very good for Bartonella. So here we are. We're getting everybody positive for Bartonella. Well, what do I do again? I take my own blood. I'm positive. I have a positive titer.
Active positive or past infection?
You can't tell. Most of it's IgG. You don't know.
Okay.
But I'm positive. I'm like 1 to 128 on Bartonella Henselae and Quintana. What? Okay, that's nuts. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Of course, with me, I call Dr. Ed Breitschwert, who runs the lab, who is a scientist. I can't tell you how much I admire that man. He is brilliant, but he's also wonderful, and just, I love the way he thinks. So I said, listen, you know, I did this serologic test and I'm positive. He said, okay, Rosalie, why don't you do our special triple draw? That's three blood tests over the course of a week. And what you're looking is you're trying to get the Bartonella and see evidence of PCR, okay, on the specialized testing. I do that. Well, that's negative. But my serology is higher, 1-2-256. My titer is higher on blood work. This is ridiculous. Is this a lousy test? Is everybody going to be positive? I'm fine. So I decided what I had been involved with looking biopsies of the stria from two of my patients were involved with Marna Erickson, who is a specialist in dermatologic assessments and, you know, tick-borne illness. I mean, she's brilliant. So what we found in my kids is the concentration of the Bartonella was highest and higher in the stria, but in the tissue that was not discolored, there was also evidence of Bartonella. So I decided, I don't have stria, but I'm going to ask my friend, the dermatologist, to take a biopsy, and let's see what we got, you know, because this is ridiculous. I keep getting positive tests. Well, I can show you pictures of Bartonella in my tissues. It's done by a highly specialized, you know, immunofluorescent stain with this microscope that costs, I don't know, $500,000 or something, very confocal microscopy, whatever. And I have Bart in my tissues. I'll go that the blood test was right.
Wow.
But what does that mean? And it's not clear. I think it's because, thank God, my immune system is strong. And look, we all have these things, just as I said, with chicken pox and all the and herpes and all these things. But our body, our immune system keeps these infections or organisms suppressed. But if something happens that affects our immune balance, then they can come out. I mean, that's why when these kids get a tick-borne infection, often you'll find that it looks like they have some active Epstein-Barr or other viral things. And to some degree, I think that's just a matter of the immune system. It's just not keeping everybody down.
Yeah. It's just a big load. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And
but you've got to hit the top first. You've got to treat the tick-borne. If you go and you think, oh, this is viral, you're going to miss the boat.
No, I think that is so important because I am always curious about why our children can't handle these loads. Clearly, like your body can. And, you know, I always go off on like food industry and all the chemicals and all the toxins. And that's where people like also you get like a lot of eye rolls. But I do think everything does matter and it just kind of adds to the load, especially with these young bodies. You know, they're vulnerable.
Well, look, the kids today are very different than the kids I first saw when I started practicing. They are sicker. They are much more multidimensionally impaired. And I mean that with learning issues, mood problems, anxiety, all these different things, autistic spectrum. Look, when I started in training, autism was what, 1 in 10,000 kids? Now it's what, 1 in 54 or even, you know, more frequent?
Right.
What's going on? And it probably is multifactorial. One has to be careful that one doesn't think, well, their belief is it. People get hung up that way. And I think it's important for them to realize it's not so simple. God, I wish it was. So I learn from the people who work with mold, you know, and just all these environmental toxins. Okay, here's a great trivia fact. You hear about mold a lot more than years ago. Well, in around 1978, a law was passed to get rid of lead in paint, which makes sense because we didn't like our kids getting lead from eating windowsills and stuff. The only thing is, lead is a mold retardant. It slows mold growth.
Wow.
So they were able to continue to sell whatever they had in stock, but any new paint could not have lead. And that very much, I believe, contributes to why we're talking about mold so much.
So interesting.
All these things around us have major effects.
Absolutely. No, it's so true. You're right. And I think that's such an important point. It's not one thing. It's multifaceted. That's why it's a complex illness. And it's not going to be like a one and done pill. It's like an onion. It's a big layered approach.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network, or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
So many people ask me today, what is the protocol for your kids now that they have recovered? And our biggest staple is Vital Plan herbs. I even use them for my treatment. It's the only thing I use to treat my Lyme, and I feel amazing. I am so grateful for Dr. Rawls and his brand because Vital Plan herbs are clean, clean, clean. Because of this, my kids never experienced herxing. Low and slow is the name of the game here, and I successfully pulled my daughter off of antibiotics through the use of Vital Plan herbs. The herbs that we are on are in today's show notes, and you can also use my promo code for 15% off. It's simply VeryHappy15. That promo code again is VeryHappy15. I wanted to swing back though to Bartonella and this young man who did test positive. He was doing well before, you know, he had come back with, I believe it was mycoplasma.
Oh no, he had a strep.
Oh, he had strep. Sorry. Strep titers. Thank you. And then he was doing well after 3 months. And then he started acting up again, is what you had mentioned. And he tested positive for Bartonella. So bring us back to, you know, the course of treatment or what you saw in your line of work.
Well, when he was treated for Bartonella, as well as on medications for me, okay, medications that I would use in someone who was bipolar, you know, he got much better. He got back to the nicer self. And I think what's important is parents need to do reading. Don't believe everything you read on Dr. Google. Very, very important.
So what kind of reading should we be doing? Like specific to like Lyme books or tick-borne illness literature?
Anything about that, okay? There are some, you know, amazing books about infections that are for lay people. This is Your Mind on Parasites or something. It's a great thing, Parasites. And I love that book because in it, it talks about how Toxoplasma gondii, which is a type of parasite, single cell, and you can get it from uncooked meat, cat feces. That's why you don't want pregnant women around cats. And, you know, changing their litter. And what it can do is it can cause a mouse. They can only reproduce in the cat gut. Okay. So this is an organism that wants to get to the cat. But if a mouse gets infected with it, the mouse suddenly loses its fear of the cat. And it may go towards the cat. So here we are, seeing a behavioral change in that mouse because of the infection. Well, if it can happen to the mouse, why can't it happen to us? And toxo has been associated at times with bipolar disorder, because people with bipolar in the mouse, the rodents, they were more impulsive. Mm. What are bipolar people? They may be more impulsive. People infected with toxo who have active infection have more car accidents. They're at higher risk for suicide. So I think, I don't know if you've heard about the concept of one health. That is something I absolutely believe in.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's the belief that all the creatures on Earth, it's really one health. You know, what we see in dogs is what we see in people many times with many different illnesses. They're finding that's the case with cancer. And actually, that's why now they're studying dogs with certain kind of cancers, because that'll help them with humans. And it's very funny, because sometimes it seems like veterinary medicine is more advanced in certain areas than human medicine.
So true.
And human medicine, the reverse. Sometimes, though, human medicine's ahead. But it is fascinating to think that we're all separate. It's just not true.
Right. And I have read the book. I think it's Brain on Parasites, I believe is the book that you might be referring to. But yes, and it's exactly what you're explaining, that so much of our behavior, and especially what drives our kids, is parasites, bacteria in our brains. And so this is the conversation that we're having that I wish more people in the mental health community were having as well. I wish that conversation was happening more and more there.
Well, I think, you know, it's like with pans and pandas. I mean, you know, that was the pediatricians. Sue Sweeto's a pediatrician, the person who first wrote about it. It just takes a lot of time for things to get into the mainstream medicine and mainstream psychiatry. I mean, I will hear stories. Parents will call me up and describe this kid who's hospitalized. It's the same story multiple times. I mean, it's sad, but multiple times treated with meds, they seem unresponsive. They think of suicide all the time. It's just everything that would be a parent's nightmare.
Yeah.
But nobody's ever thought, look for infection.
Right.
You're not going to lose anything, right?
You got nothing to lose.
And treatment may change a child's life.
Yes.
And it's funny, because over time, what I've learned with my kids is I can tell, like when they're herxing, think about it, okay? What is a herx? A herx is reaction to the antibiotic.
To the die-off. So that you're killing the bacteria, so you've got a die-off reaction.
And you've got die-off, plus other factors actually may come into play there. So what happens during a herx is you get a worsening of your symptoms. So if you have a hot knee, it will be a very hot knee. Well, if you have a hot temper, you can have a very hot temper. And that's often what people don't realize. So clinically, it's great for me, because I can often say, uh-oh, what's he on? I got to call your doctor. Maybe we need to back down and talk to the prescribing doctor about, listen, he's herxing. And, you know, this is very nice, but he's going to be in a psychiatric hospital. So back down on the rifampin or whatever, depending on what it is.
Right.
It's amazing to me to just be able to psychiatrically see, or like the recurrence. You know, some of my kids, they'll be off. When he was off antibiotics for 6 months, maybe, and then he starts. He's not the same. He's more depressed, irritable, a bunch of different symptoms that make me think, oh, the bug is there.
Right. And it could be a new load. I mean, I had seen this with my own kids, where when you treated the babesia, which was the parasites first, and then you went after the Lyme, and they were doing great. And then it's quiet, and all of a sudden the Bartonella just comes out.
I was going to say, sometimes you treat those things and the strials show up on the arm.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. I mean, I've lived this life and this is such an important conversation to have, but there's something I also wanted to ask you. You had mentioned that some of these kids that you treat are on medication, could be a mood stabilizer, could be antidepressant. Do you ever take them off of these medications after treating tick-borne illnesses?
Yes, I think there are three groups of kids. One, there's, and then I think it's a very small group, that you treat them for the psychiatric illness as well as the tick-borne illness. And as they eventually get better, you're able to remove the psychiatric medication. There's another group that as they improve, it appears the body really needs less of the psychiatric medicine. Often what I see is like they get the side effects, which they didn't have before. Suddenly now the Risperdal is making them a lot more tired because they don't need it anymore. They're better or some degree of improvement. Do you understand what I'm saying? So what they were stable on before, they don't need as much now. So that they may need to continue on the medicine, but at a lower dose. Because remember, people talk about how Lyme goes to your weakest part. Well, if you're genetically predisposed to psychiatric illness, it may well bring that out. And you still may be left with that because that's your genes. And that's a third group. Those are the kids that need psychiatric medicine, you know, even after they've been treated for the tick-borne illness.
Yes.
And you don't know where this is going to go, you know, where this lies, who the child is when he walks in, which of the three groups he's going to fall into. And also, one thing that really gets me is that, you know, parents will say, well, wait a minute, if it's infection, I don't want to put him on psychiatric meds. Okay, so you want him to keep beating everybody up and taking out knives and maybe one in a hospital, up in a hospital, or hallucinating? Let's get real. Don't run from the psychiatrist. He really needs to be, he or she needs to be an important part of your team because your child and you and the family has to survive treatment, has to survive the illness. So there are times when absolutely getting the psychiatric medicine on board as you do the antibiotics will be crucial. And actually, you know, getting the medical treatment will make a kid who seemed resistant to a mood med will suddenly seem like, oh, it's working.
Thank you for saying that. It's very important, I think, for parents to hear that too, because there's a lot of people treating their kids. And for whatever reason, we all have our own emotion about it. You're going to feel badly about incorporating that psychiatric med or the antipsychotic or the mood stabilizer. There's so many different categories. And my philosophy has been, we have to do what's right for this moment in time, in the present moment, you know, and dosages go up and down. And sometimes I've weaned my children off of things and I've had to introduce new things, but you know, it is all about the present moment. And I'm glad that you shared that piece.
Well, because it really bothers me because, you know, a lot of the kids I see are in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, these depressed kids, they are at risk for suicide and suicide rates have increased. I mean, hello world, maybe infections also play a role. It boggles my mind. And actually there's been a significant increase in the 10 to like 14 year old age group in the world, not just here. And then one study found that, and we're talking about suicide. I'm not talking about attempts. I'm talking, maybe I am talking attempts, whatever. But the point is, everybody talks about the mental health crisis. To me, I cannot believe that one in six kids between the ages of 2 and 8 has a diagnosable behavioral, psychiatric, or developmental disorder. 1 in 6. And if you look at mental illness in adulthood, half begins by age 14. So these childhood years are crucial. Okay. And what do these tick-borne disorders do? They take the kids away from life. I mean, really, they can't do the sports. They have a hard time getting friends many times. It's just, it's a shame.
It's really impacting them too at these big milestones of brain development and social emotional learning. And I'm saying this just from my own experience. And you do miss, I mean, my children are doing so much better, but I know for my son, especially, he missed a good 3 years of social emotional learning. So there's the catch up, you know, and navigating that while you're at the tail end of treatment, you know, it's like, it's its own phase. And so, yeah, I'm just so grateful that you are able to share so much more about this. It's so important.
It's interesting to me that, you know, some kids will very much, I'm just thinking about, you know, a parent I just talked to recently. And it's clear that to me, that the child has been depressed for a while, has gotten treatment, remains depressed, but the kid's getting treatment, the neurologist is involved, the pediatrician's involved, but none of them really understand what's going on. I mean, because all of the meds that they chose and the kid's reactions, I predicted. When the mom told me a story, I said, oh, then did he get angry and irritable, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I mean, it's when you do this enough, it's pretty clear. And it was amazing to me because I know what meth I want to put that kid on, you know, yeah. Unless, of course, we have a problem with it. But I know it's less likely to. These kids are very sensitive to psychiatric meds. So if an antidepressant, they may need a lot less than a regular kid, or it's going to flip their mood and make them appear angry or agitated and just off the wall. And so you have to approach this very slowly, very rationally. I try to tell parents up front, you know, what are the side effects that, you know, you need to be concerned about? That they're very rare, but it doesn't matter. If it's one in a million and you've got that one, that's all you care about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they need to know what to be alert to. And it's funny. And then, of course, some of them, like, forget it. I'm not going to put my kid on that. On the other hand, they say, go read aspirin. You can bleed into your head. You can bleed into your butt. I mean, let's get real. These things are not common occurrences, but can occur. We're watching. That's exactly what we're doing. But I really have a hard time when the kid is like really out of control and no, it's an infection. We first want to deal with the infection. Well, what about the damage to his self-esteem?
Right.
He likes hitting all of you and being nasty to his friends. That's going to do damage.
Yeah. It's its own type of damage. And I think what's happening is because the parent is just seeing these other behavioral issues that are related to the infection, and they themselves are not living in the body of the child, of like how hellish it really can be for the child. That's kind of where like the disconnect is. So yeah, it's important that you shared that. My last question, Dr. Greenberg, is, if you're a parent listening to this and your child has been seeing a psychiatrist and has been having issues, but they're not getting better, they're on medication, they're not getting better. In fact, in some ways, they might be getting worse in different areas. What is your advice to that parent?
Well, obviously, it will depend upon the situation, kid's illness, the family situation, and the physician that they're seeing. And also the state of our knowledge, okay? I often find, like with my kids with tick-borne illnesses, they often get treated by one person. And then we get to a place where they plateau. And they just don't get better. They're better than they were, but they're not where they need to be. And at that point, it needs to be a change and practitioner that they see that has a different approach. Because unfortunately, we don't know what the right approach is. There are really no good studies on kids, and kids are not really little adults. So you're kind of left in this uncertain world, and different people know different things. And so often they wind up needing to change practitioners in terms of the tick-borne illness, but also psychiatrically. There's nothing wrong with getting a second opinion.
Agree.
I mean, to me, it's something you should be open about. I really don't want somebody, because going behind my back in a way, because my feeling is that if you want to do that, that's fine. Just go to somebody who knows more than me, or who is more aware of whatever.
Right.
You know, rather than somebody who's been practicing for 2 years.
I have this motto too with doctors and practitioners is everyone has a season. You know, and sometimes you might just be in a new season, and it's okay, you know, if you need to.
Personal. It's your child.
If somebody wanted to reach out to you or look into your books that you've written, where is the best place to connect with you, Dr. Greenberg?
Well, they can go to my website, www.rosaliegreenbergmd.com. I have a blog that I started. Unfortunately, I've been doing so many other things, I haven't gotten back to it, which I really have to. But there's my office number, and I think there's an email or whatever. And if I can help someone or direct them, good. You can't treat everybody. And actually, I only treat kids under 14. Okay. And the reason I do that is because a lot of people are afraid to medicate the younger kids. I'm not pushing meds. Believe me, I'm very conservative in giving medication. But if your kid is suffering and the family is suffering, you have to do what they need. You have to do what's right.
Dr. Greenberg, thank you so much for sharing these stories and your experience and for all that you do, the awareness that you provide in your industry and in the Lyme community. I am so grateful to have connected with you, and I am so grateful for you to be on Very Happy Stories.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think the kids I see are wonderful kids, but they are affected by lousy biologic infections and whatever. And you know, if we can make them better,
let's do it.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. If you felt inspired, please submit a review. More reviews help others find Very Happy Stories. And don't forget to subscribe and share this with someone else you know who could use a very happy story right about now. Until next time, have a happy day.
Said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.